Good morning, beautiful people. Welcome to Smashy Business Show. It's a new week, so new risks. It's the 25th of November today. I am Ward Ahmed, and I have with me
Abdul Majid.
And today we have some exciting, exciting, exciting topics for you today. First off, starting with Bitcoin MENA is happening this December on the 9th and 10th in Abu Dhabi at the ADNEC Center, and it's just getting a whole lot more better. Now, their speaker lineup, it's absolutely insane. We have one of the Middle East's and the UAE's biggest ally from America, Eric Trump, the son of Donald Trump himself. Now, why is this really interesting for us? Now, Eric Trump is actually the Trump Organization's Executive Vice President of Development and Acquisitions, and they truly, truly have an important expanding luxury real estate portfolio in the Gulf. So what does this mean? So just earlier this year, the Trump Organization, in collaboration with Dad Global, announced Trump Signature Villas in Oman. Then they announced a Trump Tower in Saudi Arabia, and they even have one coming up in Dubai. So you better really mark your calendar, because you never know, we might just get a new announcement from Trump at Bitcoin MENA. How are you feeling about this, Majid?
It's a good event. Bitcoin, the name itself says it. There's like rumors that Bitcoin will cross $100,000 soon. I've been trying since Friday. I've been looking at my phone constantly.
Very obsessively, by the way.
I had to, because as soon as it happens, we have to announce it on our crypto account, which is Smashy Crypto. You can go follow Smashy Crypto for anything that you want to see or hear or read about crypto. We're trying to do more and more stories on it.
So yeah,
we'll
you try know,
to
Majid,
get it better. Yeah.
My biggest regret is not purchasing Bitcoin when the price was very low.
Yeah.
And now just seeing that price rise and seeing many people who are about to win from this, the regret that I feel is so immense. But you know, if you're like me, you know, you missed your chance. This is exactly why you need to go to Bitcoin MENA. So you can actually catch up with all the updates. Yeah. So you know what's gonna happen, how the market works. I know that a lot of people don't have the most knowledge on Bitcoin, but keep in mind, like, this is the new capital power that we have in this day and age. So if you wanna catch up with it, I would make sure to catch up with that summit.
So if you have $100,000, will you buy a Bitcoin right now? Would you? Do you think
right
it's
now,
a good
no,
price?
No, because you buy when something, the price is low.
Yeah.
You don't buy when it's high. That's a waste of money. You sell when it's high.
So you always buy when there's a sale going on, right?
Yeah, of course. Like when the gold is down, you buy gold. You don't buy gold when gold is more expensive. But
but with Bitcoin, the good thing,
some
people will hate me for this comment, but the good thing is that Bitcoin is so volatile that there is a chance that after Trump comes into power, he's formally brought in as the president, there is a chance he may announce some policy or something that it can go down again. In this year, even like 4 months ago, it went down to a historic low for the year of 38,000. So imagine if someone bought it at 38,000, right now he's more than tripled his money. Yeah, he has tripled his money. So investing in Bitcoin is very tricky. The experts who are famously called the crypto bros, the guys who are millionaires because of cryptocurrencies, you should listen to them sometimes. Sometimes their advice is good. Sometimes it's confusing. But the main idea is always keep an eye on the currency. It's just like the stock market, but a quicker stock market. In stock markets, you usually deal, if you're a day trader, you deal in hours, in multiple hours or in days. You buy something and then you sell it after 2-3 hours. Bitcoin, you sell it after 1 minute if it's going up or down. So yeah, with cryptocurrency, it's risky, but again, high risk, high reward.
Of course.
And always buy low and sell high. So wait, there may be a chance that it comes down somewhat, but with pro crypto Trump coming into power, there is a very low chance. But there is always a chance with cryptocurrency.
For sure. And for today, we have big, big announcements for COP29.
Yeah.
They have finally come up with a climate fund that we have been waiting so long for.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the numbers, Majid?
So $300 billion. They've announced
$300 billion.
You look at it, you think of it as a very big number. Yeah, $300 billion for climate funding. The idea is that the rich countries, basically who are the main polluters, because they have bigger industries and they produce the most environmentally dangerous stuff, chemicals, fumes, everything. They should be the one paying the developing countries, the island nations. The island nations, some of them have been predicted that by 2050, they won't even exist. So those countries, are suffering because water levels are rising, temperature levels are rising. Everything bad is happening to those smaller island nations. So those countries were not happy. And one of those countries, it's not a small country, that was like the surprise for me, that the person, the envoy to COP29 from India, she was really angry because we've seen devastating floods in India. Their coastal belt, the whole belt is suffering from floods. The internal areas are suffering from floods because of climate change. It's very simple. So they were very angry. And the activists, I remember COP28, the very good part about COP28, we should praise it whenever I get a chance. COP28 had a whole area for activists and protesters. So they created a whole environment where they could protest. It was unseen ever in a COP where they gave a special area to activists. Otherwise, they're usually doing it outside the area or halls.
For this climate fund, are a bunch of countries, and how many countries are involved with it?
There's no exact number of countries. Everyone signed it. The good thing about COP is whenever you sign a document, everyone signs it. Because the smaller countries, they thought nothing, something is better than nothing. And for the richer countries, it was like, okay, we're doing something for you, so don't be scared. But obviously, the biggest contributors come from, the biggest money comes from private organizations in the developed countries. So US, UK,
but
Europe.
You know, Majid, the reason why I specifically asked if all countries have signed this is because what I see this as is that it's a very classical example of game theory. The reason why they signed this climate fund in the first place is because all these players, all these countries joined in together. But the catch is just one pulls out. Just one major player pulls out and the entire thing will crumble. And I'll tell you why. I don't predict for that to happen. I hope that doesn't happen. But I just want to say that these agreements, we do have to mention they're always volatile. Because for like when you take a look at the context of climate change as a whole, there are three countries that actually hold the most carbon emissions in the world. Not countries, actually. Number one, you have the US. Number two, you have China. And number three, you have the EU.
All the whole countries of the European Union,
all of these three, they actually hold the most the most carbon emissions in the world. And the reason why I'm specifically mentioning this is because this is the issue with climate change, by the way. It's a transboundary pollution problem. Like, if I'm polluting, I don't just affect myself. I don't just affect the country I'm living in. I affect other countries because pollution, of course, it transcends borders. And this brings me back to my point. You know that, Majid, I believe it was in 2013. So basically in 2013, they had this Paris Agreement. And in this Paris Agreement, what happened was that the United States, it pledged to reduce emissions by 26% to 28% below 2005 levels by 2025. And so what happened is because the US did this, China also committed to peaking emissions by 2030 and achieving 20% non-fossil fuel energy. Now, this is all great, right? This is a very complementary strategic relationship. We see that in this example, the players, they were working together to, you know, very cooperatively to reduce emissions. But here's the catch. What ended up happening is that in 2017, the Trump administration actually pulled away from the Paris agreements. And do you know what happened? China was like, okay, then I don't have to reduce my emissions. And they actually increased their fossil fuel production. They increased in coal consumption. And so what I'm trying to say is that these agreements, they're truly so beautiful, but just one country pulls out. One country pulls out and it just triggers this entire game where the other players are like, it is a domino effect. If one is increasing, the other might increase or decrease it. But one pulling out, it makes other countries think that, okay, we can do that too and we can evade responsibility. And that's what I always find so scary about climate change. Like, are they going to do that? Are they going to pull out? Because if they pull out, you know everybody else is going to pull out. Because climate change, honestly, dealing with it, it is very expensive. It is costly.
It's expensive. It's costly. Your point, adding on it, usually when a big country like US pulls out, everyone pulls out because they set an example for everyone to follow. But the good thing about, again, I'll come back to the region, the good thing about UAE, Saudi Arabia, all the countries in the Middle East, the developed countries right now, they have very nicely well-set goals.
For
we
sure.
have the year of sustainability, which was last year because we were hosting COP, the UAE. But they continued into second year in 2024 as well. We've seen so many things happening from even the like smallest detail of reducing plastic use. You go to any store, you won't see plastic bags now. There's jute bags, all those recyclable products. Obviously, you pay for them, but it's better to bring a bag from your home. Buy it once, buy one or two. I'll say always buy multiple, put two of them in the car at home. So if you, even if you forget it, you can take it out from the car and buy groceries.
Yeah.
So from those micro level moves to macro level moves of international policy of nationally reducing carbon emissions to like 30, 40, 50%. UAE consensus, I remember, all the countries agreed. The UAE consensus was famous for this, that by 2035, the next decade, all the countries in the world promised that they'll reduce it by 60%. Everyone promised. So everyone includes everyone,
yeah,
US, China, everyone.
You know, I remember even before the COP29 in Azerbaijan, I saw this news article, I believe it was on the Khalij Times, and the UAE, it was already plotting to make sure that they do not come out of this summit without this climate fund. That's so amazing. But that's a sad thing, though, Majid. Because as I said, you know, America, China, the EU, they produce the most emissions.
Yeah.
Because of the fact they produce the most emissions, it's very unfortunate, but they are the ones who decide the trajectory of what happens to our planet.
Yeah. Apart from planet, I prefer going to the micro level. Again, coming back to that India point, she was really angry because she knew that she comes from a developed country. India is a very big economy. It's the fastest growing economy in the world. China is the biggest growing economy. All these countries, they get affected a lot because they have mountain ranges, the snow is melting, the water is coming down. So India's move, and then one of the good things that I saw in this COP story was the next host is Brazil. And if you see these three hosts, UAE, Azerbaijan, Baku, and then Brazil.
Next all one, of Brazil?
Them, yeah.
Ooh, I'm going to be there.
Funny part is all of them are big oil exporters. And so all of them holding COP, it's a good sign that these countries are hosting it. UAE hosted it. They planned and promised a lot of stuff, and they are implementing it. UAE's plan, if I remember correctly, is to go net zero by 2050. So in the like next 20, 25 years, they want to completely remove all the emissions. And the most important part, we've seen them diversify away from oil.
Of course.
That's the biggest thing that we talk about whenever we talk about UAE or Saudi Arabia.
But you know, Majid, just going back to that point about the Indian lady that you were just discussing, I think that's the entire issue with you know, trying to combat climate change, is that what happens is that, you know, there are, I'm pretty sure, because, you know, people in like areas in India, I've always seen videos where they have very sustainable practices, even the way that they live. But this is where the issue stems from. While you have certain countries that are adopting such climate-friendly practices, because of the fact that other, you know, very large countries like the US and China, they're free riding on this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because they're very aware of the fact that there are a lot of other countries that have very climate-friendly activities. The UAE, well, you know, you're going to get a fine if you throw trash on the ground.
Yeah.
They free ride on this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's a very classical example of free riding on it, knowing that, okay, because of their good behavior, we don't have to have good behavior.
Yeah.
They're making up for it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just the unfortunate thing about
also, the thing about US, Trump is coming back. The Biden administration was still in favor of climate change to an extent, but with Trump coming, no one knows what the future is of their...
Future is money.
Their future in terms of like basically if they will follow the directives, if they won't, we'll see when he comes into power and lays out all the policies. But right now, the idea is that Trump is very anti all these things, anti-climate things, because he believes business should go on and people should make money, because people will make money and that money will go into like funding his elections. That's the simplest explanation you can give. He's very pro-industry. He's very pro-businesses. So that is why they brought him back to an extent. One of the biggest guys who was his supporter, Elon Musk, owns... he is trying to move away from oil. He's trying to make electric cars and everything. But his SpaceX rockets, they also burn. They also cause a lot of fumes. It's not like they just are run on electricity, right?
Yeah,
so SpaceX is one of the things that the space exploration programs, they're one, not the biggest, but one of the contributors of pollution. So that we will have to see. So there's a lot of... things involved. It's not just
there
very
is.
Simple that, oh,
there
Trump is
anti.
He has a lot of supporters who are very anti these policies because then
why,
they won't, they will stop making money.
And that's why, because we have such leaders, you know, now more than ever, sustainable practices are becoming so important. And Saudi Arabia is leading in this field. They are launching the first sugar-free soda known as Milaf Cola that is made from date extracts. I know. That's very, very interesting. So essentially what happened is after the camel milk brand Noog's success under the parent company Sawani in Saudi Arabia, it was launched by the Public Investment Fund in 2023 and famously endorsed by Cristiano Ronaldo. The kingdom has set out to create Milaf Cola. And this is really going to reshape the beverage industry in Saudi Arabia while still driving its diversification plan. Now, let me tell you a bit more about the companies who are involved in this. So Al Medina's Heritage Company, a public investment fund subsidiary, in collaboration with the National Center for Palms and Dates, is launching this soda. Now, this is, when I take a look at this is so historic because I've never heard of something like this before. I really have never. Sugar-free cola made from dates. And I think when I take a look at the story, Majid, it really speaks to my heart because of the fact that Saudi Arabia, they are leading while still staying true to their Arabic values because dates, they, you know, they're embedded into Arabic culture, they're embedded into Islamic culture, and to see that a country is rising, it's becoming an important tech hub while staying true to its Arabic values, especially its traditions, that is something so beautiful.
The most important part is that it's coming at a very good time.
Exactly.
We've seen the global beverage giants, they're scaling back and they're facing a lot of problems because of their association with Israel or somewhat vague association with Israel. And Israel's genocide in Gaza is happening. So a lot of people are moving away from Coke, Pepsi, all the big giants. So this is like the prime opportunity for any beverage idea to go into the market. We have seen Gaza Cola, Pakola in Pakistan, Egypt has their own version, all the Middle East, Jordan is coming up with their own version. Gaza Cola is exporting to these countries because obviously there is demand. So a lot of companies came up with a lot of products in this last year because they know that there is a gap now, a very big gap in the market. Because beating these giants, the cola giants, the beverage giants, was nearly impossible. But now you have Alakoze Cola. There's so many options
and
now.
And not just that, by the way, Saudi Arabia itself, it's one of the largest exporters of dates in the world. And following right after it, there is actually Israel. And especially considering the political climate right now in the world, the fact that Saudi Arabia is further capitalizing on being this exporter and it's further using dates to create more like variations of products with it, it is really going to move that date capital away from Israel. And I think that in itself, that's something amazing. That's something really amazing. But
There's a lot of numbers in the stories. Saudi Arabia's date exports rose actually by 9.9%, 750 million Saudi riyals. Were gained because of that in the first half of 2024 this year, compared to 683 million in the same period in 2023. So it grew, the market is growing, and 100% of their growth in Brazil, they actually saw 100% growth. Apart from that, Norway, Italy, Canada, it's going all across the globe. Notable increase was in Germany, 91.5% increase. So a lot of these European countries and Asian countries and Southeast Asian countries, they're now exporting more and more stuff from Saudi Arabia. And obviously, Saudi Arabian dates are great, to be honest. I've eaten nearly a lot of kinds. They're great. The climate is perfect to grow them, so they have a very good date market. UAE itself has a very big date market. Yeah,
but you know, Majid, I've noticed something very recently. A lot of the dates that I buy, they always have so much added sugar.
Dates?
They do. They add sugar into them.
Oh, I never had an idea about
that. No, because I always read behind the label. Oh. And that bothers me so much because I'm growing up, I'm very used to eating like, you know, dates that are, this is why I love Saudi dates. They have these dates, I forgot their name, but they're very like rock solid.
Oh, yeah.
They're rock solid. And when you actually bite into them, it's not like a sugar rush. It's these are the best kinds of dates.
Nice.
The ones that fall right off of the palm tree. I have family members who bring them for me from Saudi Arabia. They increase your iron levels, by the way.
Nice.
So I would. Oh my God! Do you think this soda will be good for iron deficient people?
Depends.
Oh my God!
We'll buy
they should
it
totally it, market it as that.
When iron it comes to UAE, we'll pick it up and we'll read the label behind it and see what's good. But yeah, see, processed will always be processed. Fresh will always be fresh. I always prefer a fresh date milk, like kind of thing that I can make at home. But obviously, when you go out, you don't have like your blender and everything with you. Mm-hmm. You can always buy them. Just read the label. That's the part. If it's good for you, why not? But the market is growing. There's two main ideas, two main takeaways. The beverage market is growing, and Saudi Arabia is using dates to diversify the products that it's offering. So I personally think that Saudi Arabia is doing great with these.
They're doing very great. They're
using Ronaldo in the ad for the other one. Yeah, perfect marketing technique.
For
use
sure.
Ronaldo for everything, right?
And just on the topic of Saudi Arabia, for our final topic today, 20% of businesses in Saudi Arabia and the UAE have no plans for AI adoption. Now, I know you're all sitting there thinking, what did they just say? Because we always talk about AI. We always talk about all of these AI-driven startups. So this one's very interesting. So basically, a recent survey by the International Data Corporation revealed that a mixed landscape of AI adoption in Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So now, while 28% of organizations in the region have already invested in artificial intelligence, 21% of them report that they have no plans to take part in this whatsoever. And I commend them. I really commend them. Look at you, keeping people's jobs.
No, it's not people's job. It's actually making their jobs easier and making using less time to do more productive stuff. That's my idea of using AI. See, it's not just using ChatGPT or like image makers or other stuff. A lot of people now, developers I've seen, you go to the freelancing sites, you see a lot of new developers now making custom AI chatbots and products for different companies. For example, if in our company we need some process which is mechanical, is repeatable, is easily repeatable, we can always create a small AI application and make it easy. We won't need a human to do that mechanical stuff. So they can focus more on other stuff which humans are better at, creativity, writing, speaking, a lot of other stuff. So that way, AI is very helpful. I led with this number because the number is quite significant. It's not, and compared to the people who have already adopted it, 28%, there's 21% still who don't want to do it. The rest remaining people said that they plan to do it. So that means they still haven't done it.
There's hope for humanity.
Yeah, so they still haven't done it. So 28%, 100% adoption, they've taken some AI and used it in their operation, but still a lot of like 72% of the people, they are either planning or 21% are like, no, sorry, no AI, we'll use humans.
Yeah,
so it's
sure.
a very good report. The main idea is that AI is everywhere. So it's better to win the race by using it, right?
It is. AI is everywhere. And with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. We really, really appreciate having you here. Make sure to tune in for tomorrow's show. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find us on Beehive. We have a newsletter there. And you can also find us on Instagram, X, and LinkedIn. Please make sure to tune in and have a lovely, lovely day.